We have more now on the Interior Department's investigation into boarding schools for Native American children. From 1819 to 1969, the federal government forcibly sent thousands of American Indian, Alaska Native, and Native Hawaiian children to more than 400 boarding schools across the U.S. The Interior Department has detailed rampant physical and sexual abuse at the schools. Many of the children died and were buried on school grounds. There's an effort underway to create a truth and healing commission on the schools and what happened at them. Dr. Janine Pease is an enrolled Crow Indian, a research historian, and board chair of the Crow Language Consortium, and she's also the grandchild of a boarding school survivor. Dr. Pease, welcome.
Thank you.
Dr. Pease, would you tell us about the members of your family who were sent to one of these schools?
Well, the first member that I'd like to talk to you about is my great-grandmother, who was sent with a total of 14 children from North Dakota. She went to Hampton Institute. She was about the age of 10. And while she was there as a student, seven of those 14 children passed away due to illnesses that they contracted at the school there.
This is a school in Virginia. Were they buried on the grounds, do you know?
Insofar as I know, they were, in fact, buried there, Yes. And then I have my grandmother and my grandfather attended the local Crow Agency boarding school. That boarding school was known as a very mean place. In fact, the way in which they say it in the Crow language, it's called a mean place. My grandfather finished the sixth or so grade there and went off to Sherman Institute or Sherman Indian School in Riverside, California. And he's one of the children that you would say was a runaway. He left, he and a couple of his classmates, and he came all the way back to Crow Country somehow. Of course, I'm a descendant of his, which is a testament to his survivability. He came all the way as a youngster, probably at the age of 13 or 14. From California to Montana, long distance. But there's another story in our family that I'd like to tell you about is that there's an elderly grandmother, Akala, whose little grandson was being pursued by the tribal police. Now, each fall, the Crow Indian police would round up the children, especially the youngest ones, because they would be new to the school in Crow Agency, the boarding school. But this grandmother was resistant. She decided to take her grandson, and she and her grandson camped in one of our mountain ranges. And she evaded. She managed to be ahead of the police for about 2 weeks with her grandson. Well, when they captured him, they took him directly to the Crow boarding school, a distance of some 30 miles. And she followed them on her horse. She took her entire camp. She had a wall tent that she set up right next to the fence that was around the Crow Agency boarding school. And she stayed there from August until January, all through those months, into the winter months, by herself there, having her cooking fire in front of her tent. And every day she watched her little grandson, who was 4 and a half, march from the dorm to the cafeteria to the classroom building and so on, military uniform and all. By the end of January or so, she realized that he was probably going to live because many children at that very early age had not survived.
And what happened?
He actually managed to survive Crow boarding school. His name is Robbie Yellowtail. He's one of those, you might say, achievers, bright, plucky young fellows. He did eventually go to Riverside Indian School in California, or to Sherman. And in his adulthood, once he returned, he became a political activist. He became also the very first tribal member who was ever appointed to be our Indian agent, working for the Bureau of Indian Affairs. And later, after he was agent, he became the Crow tribal chairman. Our tribal experience with boarding schools has been both bitter and sweet.
When you say bitter and sweet, I'm surprised that you mentioned sweet. What are you referring to there?
Well, there certainly are survivors who returned from the boarding schools and managed to establish a wonderful life, really, for themselves and their families.
Is that because of the boarding schools and their time there, or in spite of it?
Perhaps in spite. I understand from their surviving children that they really have fond memories and would have positive ways to talk about the teachers they had, the students that they met, the things that they learned, the libraries in which they studied, and so on. I've made it my business to conduct oral history interviews with the children of these surviving students. And where we find achievement, we find fondness, we find students who somehow met teachers and staff members who helped them somehow thrive. A lot of times these folks do not talk about the more terrible times when they had them.
What are the hopes for the National Commission on Truth and Healing? What do you want it to accomplish?
Well, the way in which the duties have been sketched out in the proposed legislation gives them investigation powers. They would perhaps hold hearings to bring the voices of the survivors and survivors' children in, but they would also investigate, that is, look at records of these schools and even have subpoena power to acquire records that would identify the names of the children who attended, the names of the children who fell ill, who died in these boarding schools and who were buried there in marked, but especially unmarked graves. They also would have set out procedures for the protection of unmarked graves and support the repatriation of the remains of the children who are buried in these school cemeteries.
And what would you want the outcome to be as the investigation continues and focuses on these boarding schools, what happened to the children? What would you want ideally to come from this for your community, for Indigenous people across the nation?
First and foremost, I think the telling of the stories of the children who went to the boarding schools is a place to begin. Because to convey those stories, the voices of those children, the experiences of those families, the students who saw their fellow students die due to beatings or illness, they can tell their stories. There is healing power in the telling. In the reconciliation that's gone on around the world, like in South Africa or New Zealand, the telling of those stories has had incredible healing power. But the recognition on a national scale of the experiences of Native children in boarding schools, that recognition is a part of the healing process too, because this experience has largely been invisible, and that's hugely damaging. It's just gone unnoticed. And the children who lost their lives, they need to be recognized as they should have been at the time of their death. A lot of them were buried without anyone saying anything.
How does this fit into your efforts to keep the culture alive, to keep the language alive, which you have a major role in yourself? You teach humanities, social studies, Crow studies at Little Bighorn College, which you co-founded. How does it all fit together for you?
Well, for me, the recognition that these boarding schools pounded the language out of us and made our culture, even simple things like our games, illegal, and all of that could come back to us. And our work with the Crow Language Consortium, we've been able to work on having language immersion classrooms for pre-K, kindergarten, first, second, and third grade, where children speak the Crow language in all subjects. It is very empowering. We have family language nights where 75 or 80 people come and play games in the Crow language and sing lullabies. It's heartening, and it brings us in touch with those who lost these things in the very first place. It actually takes us right there. It's like we can hear their voices. We're publishing a dictionary online that can be used at crowlanguage.org. We can write our own histories. We can write our histories that include the voices of these children who left us and never came back. And so we can learn about our traditions. To me, that's the opportunity this commission gives us, is to perhaps bring congressional attention on a pathway to healing, a pathway to a strong community. That's what I really hope for.
Thank you so much for speaking with us. Dr. Janine Pease is a research historian and board chair of the Crow Language Consortium in Crow Agency, Montana. Thank you so much.
Thank you very much.